So even though I've given a lot of talks in the last 20 years or so, I remain kind of nervous a little bit. Just want to convey this. And also, this is a somewhat, you know, big milestone in some circles, and I'm very happy to tell you about AutoCrypt 1 was like 2018 or so, and there was a lot of activity, and also, you know, everybody talks about forward secrecy. But before we start the talk, I'd like to know, who of you is actually using a discipline on Signal? I mean, who's using Signal? Very good. Who's using a default disappearing message for all chats? Okay, this is four people. You can count. So these people are the one who are profiting most from what is called forward secrecy. Because there's a big difference, not just the magic and property, but actually what it does is it protects deletion. And that's why you have on the title reliable deletion, which is kind of a synonym for forward secrecy. And you see in the spec a little bit why we talk about this, and I will also talk about it in this talk. So what is AutoCrypt V2? It's a modern OpenPGP certificate. In case you didn't know, last year there was like RFC 9580, which is also called like, you know, crypto refresh sometimes, was finalized. It introduces a new framing, it's called V6 keys, and this specification is fully based on that and fully interoperable. It introduces post-quantum encryption, and it does that by also using the ongoing PQC IETF drafts that are also, I don't know, somewhat finalizing soon. And what it also does, it implements what we call reliable deletion, because that is what forward secrecy is actually about. And as an additional constraint, because several of us, and I'm very involved in projects that actually try to work in very bad network conditions, like even worse than at FOSDEM. Even in network conditions where part of the internets are completely shut off and you cannot reach certain servers, you know? So any kind of central server architecture for doing something or so is out of, like, AutoCrypt V2 is not about that. What does it protect against? Very shortly, it's store now, decrypt later. So basically you think that basically you have an adversary that sits at the transport layer, even at the server itself, sees all passing traffic of end-to-end encrypted messages, stores all of that, later gets access to a device, you know, sometime later, just some weeks or whatever, and then can decrypt all of the traffic that has flowed through the server, even if the user, if the four users here had used disappearing messages by default everywhere. So if you don't delete messages, if you don't delete messages on your device, then you're not benefiting from forward secrecy. Because if somebody gets your device, they just have all the messages, not just the secret key. And the whole thing is just about reliable deletion. And then you have like the even further threat where, you know, there's lots of discussions when these quantum computers arrive. Maybe somebody can vibe code them or so. And but it will be some time. I mean, there's various things that you can follow in the last year that it's not very close. But anyway, it can happen. And then all of our current, you know, very important communication would be decrypted in 10 years from now, if somebody really manages to store all the data. And this is actually, these decrypt later attacks are what AutoCrypt V2 protects against. So why it matters for users? Well, you want to be sure that if you delete something or you have a disappearing chat, that there's basically no way to recover it for somebody. If it's gone from your device, then after some time, it's also, doesn't matter what somebody collected, like it's gone, you know? And the particular part that is, it needs to be reliable in completely fragmented network situations means you cannot introduce a remote dependency. I first have to ask somewhere, something like a pre-key server, like what Signal offers. And so if you look at current implementations in the last 10 years, I think Signal was introduced 2013, and at the various attempts from messengers implementing reliable deletion, they require network sync. They require pre-keys to be available. What's the current pre-keys from this? There's pre-key exhaustion attacks. You just kind of hammer the server, give me all the pre-keys you have until it's exhausted, and then what? You cannot encrypt anymore. Somebody else, and so on. So it's like an attack vector. You have this network sync. And usually it's central servers. You know, there are attempts to make this decentralized. Talk about this later. And then there's a third complexity, which is, and you know this from if you followed the history of the last 8 years, is multi-device. Like, how well do multi-devices actually synchronize? Because they need to agree on which keys to drop, which decryption keys to drop. If they do it too early, they cannot decrypt. You know, some messengers have this unable to decrypt problem. Autocrypt v2 actually does this different. Like, it's a completely different approach to doing a reliable deletion. And it's clock time based. It's a synchronization that is relatively reliable worldwide. There's a whole section in the draft spec about this. And therefore, it doesn't require any network configuration, any network interaction. It works offline, cannot be exhausted or something like this. And both between the multiple devices and between any potential servers, there's simply no coordination required. Everything can be computed offline locally. So there's a big change that would fill its own bigger talk. Tomorrow there's a chatmail architecture talk that is coming from the Lotterjet project that will be about this, also this kind of V2 approach. So AutoCrypt 1 was focused, just like other traditional ways to do end-to-end encryption, on managing a binding. Managing a binding from an email address to a key, or signal from a phone number to a key. You know? And this binding actually needs to be managed. It's attackable. And V2 actually says, no, we just do pure cryptographic identity. You can use any transport. You can use email, you can use XMPP, you can use peer-to-peer, and so on. The certificate works. The spec actually is made for that. So, a bit down to the details, because some of you will be interested. Post-quantum is using kind of a state-of-the-art combination of MLChem 768 and the 25519 encryption, hybrid. Reliable deletion is done by kind of clock-based automatical destruction of secret keys. It's unlike the massive flexibility that past OpenPGP efforts offered, where the actual PGP structure can be all kinds of things, all kinds of keys, all kinds of algorithms. This is like using a modern approach, and it says, no, the certificate is one thing. It has very particular algorithms, carefully chosen. You cannot change them. And it's a fixed size certificate. It's 2,938 bytes always. It is completely interoperable. There's nothing new you need to do. You can use it with any V6 implementation. And there's PGP, Rust PGP, and Python examples already doing the certificate with some tests. So how does it look like? This is the 2,938 bytes. It has a primary key. It has a direct key signature. And then, and that's the interesting part, it has these two time-based encryption keys. The one, and that makes it always working, is the fallback key. That's the key you can always use. Like, if you don't have any kind of rotated key that is, like, you know, smaller for a smaller time, you just use the fallback. So encryption always succeeds if you happen to be offline somewhere and need to write a message. And then this is the part that changes all the time. This is like the rotating subkey. Currently, it's rotating at, I think, 5 days in the spec per default. But, you know, implementations can find ways to change this if they like. And it will be discussed like in the next time. The schedule is basically in the spec. If you look at it, it's there is the how long is the key valid. Let's say it's valid 10 days. So we rotate it every 5 days. Every 5 days we provide a new key. And basically the old key is still also valid for 5 days. You know, so it's like this overlap. And that makes it also like the idea there is to have always the nearest expiring keys if you chat. So you only write messages that can be very reliably deleted like immediately. The ratcheting algorithm. You know about key ratcheting, which is basically carrying a secret like a decryption key forward and generating a new from it. That's what Signal does basically also. And this is also happening here. So the secret key material is forward ratcheted, but time-based, not network synchronization-based, not per message. No. And that also works if everybody has the right wall clock, works across devices. They don't even need to talk with each other. They will deterministically, bitwise, generate the next ratcheting key. How does it work? Like the ratcheting itself is also a relatively standard way to do it. You have some inputs and you see there is this subkey secret. This is the most important part. This is the input key material. This actually goes into the key derivation function, you know, and with very particular fixed values, so there's no flexibility, very easy to analyze. And from these 160 bytes, you know, you split it and this becomes the next key. And this construction actually means that you cannot go back. That's guaranteed by the key derivation function. It's pretty standard. It's not the difference here is that it is using time. And you can look at the algorithm and the specification to and the code actually that works to see the details. So how it, I mentioned this, you have the fallback key that always works. If you don't have a time window key, basically, that is currently valid, you only have the fallback, you use that. When the answer comes, you might actually have the expiring ones, and then it just turns reliable, deletable. And the rotating subkey, the spec says, if you have a valid encryption subkey, you must use it. You cannot use the fallback key if you have a valid key. And it rotates currently in the spec by default every 5 days. And it's auto-destroyed, like if the key is expired in your local key store, then after some time you just destroy it. And that is what guarantees you the reliable deletion. Because then even if they get your device, the key is not there, and they cannot reverse the key derivation function, just like with Signal. So how does a peer manage this? It only gets this incoming 2,938 byte certificates. But the peer that receives it actually might have a few more keys. It sees one key, and then it sees the next key, and they're both valid currently, because it's like an overlapping rotation scheme. And that's fine. And maybe you get a third one, because you don't throw once the others too fast, because there might be delivery delays in the message thing. And you don't want to get an important message like 5 days later, and you can't decrypt it. You know, this is very important for people to not have this situation. So if you have a valid one, that's the algorithm. If you have a valid one, use it. Use any of them. And at best, pick the earliest with the earliest expiry. You know, so you get reliable deletion very fast. And never use the fallback key if you have a rotating valid encryption key. So we are talking about reliable deletion. And it is, if you actually think about it from the UX side of a messenger, deletion, you know, there's various deletion modes. Disappearing messages, you can maybe delete something in the history, you can, and then there's like in a group chat of like 10 people, and they have like multiple devices, you overall have like 18 devices actually having a copy of the message. Right? And if you want to be sure that the message is really deleted, then these devices need to coordinate deletion. This is what the disappearing messages mode does. And that is outside the scope of this certificate definition. This is pure cryptography. And how basically you coordinate on a higher level that the actual applications running on this really delete their stuff, that's different. Like, you know, probably if you have heard of DataChat, that, you know, they do this. They do this coordinated deletion. You have to think about this. Just having reliable deletion and it works on your one device, but you can't remove the copies everywhere else, is not, you know, what people actually want from a deleted message. And the Hyperact cryptography is just state of the art. You mix like a 255.19.19 and an MLChem 768 cryptography scheme so that an attacker needs to hack both. Like they need to be able to hack both algorithms at the same time to be able to decrypt. And this basically provides then both the current security plus the post-quantum one. And again, the OpenPGP certificate, modern, based on RFC 9580, is fixed. It fixes these algorithms. There's no choice. So when we do the security audits, they will just need to have to look at this and not like a wide range of possible things you could possibly do with like half-broken implementations. So what we get for the user, and that's why we are actually saying in the spec reliable deletion very strongly, delete messages are gone forever. You know, some of us think that the kind of talking about forward secrecy is too magic. You know, people think, oh yeah, it's very, very important, but it's very hard to understand like why. It's just like some experts say, ah, it's very important. But reliable deletion actually ties it to a user visible feature. You know, this scheme allows to actually delete stuff and it's really gone. Nobody can recover it. And the second usability goal also, that was already an autocrypt one, is no user action. You don't need to do anything. Like it's completely managed by the messaging agent. Comparisons. Everybody loves comparisons. And here we look at the actual kind of cryptographically and architecturally important things, you know, that AutoCrypt V2 actually tries to address. So we talked about the bindings. So if you look at minimal metadata, you see that signal matrix and MLS have like, you know, they have this, either they have servers that need to be there, or they have a manager binding or both. Like Signal also manages the phone number key binding and you can attack the SMS channel to actually overtake and you can protect against it with the PIN and, you know, and Intel secure enclave and whatnot. But there is a binding, you know, and that makes minimal metadata tricky.
Explain more what you mean with binding.
I can't, it's only a few minutes. decentralized, Signal clear, matrix yes. MLS, I think, still trying to figure out how to do the key coordination there. And formal specification, you know, Signal has never really specified what they're really doing there. They have like some articles and documentation, but it's not a specification. And the simplicity of implementation is something that we value very highly because we need to maintain the things with very few resources. We don't have 50 million per year. You need to find schemes that actually are workable, that are reliable. And that's why the simple implementation for us is not just like a, oh yeah, that's nice. It's actually the reason why we took so long to get somewhere where we know, okay, this is actually simple. So it's as simple that we actually want to roll this out this year. Currently it's in the IETF data tracker. We have some discussions already and like basically in spring we are moving towards we is in this case the kind of DataChat chatmail group towards implementation. And then, you know, of course, there's some testing phase rolling out v6 certificates, and then it will be in all end user releases. That's our 2026 plan. I mean, 2026 is a complicated year already, so you'll see. But I think it's quite doable. I mean, the implementations already are in parts there, so. Yes, so this is AutoPrep v2.
Setting up a new account, something, I lost my, I changed my device and I set up new, something like this, but can you explain more?
Yes.
Can you repeat shortly?
Sorry?
Just repeat shortly so everybody
can. So the question is, like, can you explain better somehow what you mean with this binding, you know? If you have a cryptographic key of someone, then you can encrypt to it. The question is always, since a very long time, how do you get to this key? And you can query a central key server and says, I have this email address. So there's, like, for example, keys.openpgp.org. And you can say, OK, for this email address, what do you have? What kind of key certificate? And this kind of, you know, I think Rust-implemented server actually makes email verification. So when you upload this, it actually checks that you really control these email addresses, so it has a certain, but you have to trust them. You know, you have to trust that they actually manage this binding nicely. And the binding is like a dictionary in Python, like a key value lookup or something like this. I have this thing, a phone number. I have this thing, an email address. Now give me the key, right? And there's a whole class of systems that work like this and a whole tradition around this. But AutoCrypt v2 is like a different thing. It's cryptography first. You say, no, you somehow need to have the key. We don't care how. And now we tell you how to do reliable deletion and post-quantum. You just use this cert. So you can actually be compatible across various messaging schemes because it doesn't talk about the transport. You know, there is a relation to AutoCrypt v1 and email, but you know, that's more like a little bit of a side topic. And that's kind of this kind of like not doing it via a binding is like a new approach that also some other people have been doing in other systems. And well, to us as implementers of end user usable applications, it seems it's very worthwhile to go further.
Okay. So thanks, Holger.
Hi, Kai.
I see that after policy, AutoCrypt v2 is about an auto deletion policy. That's a very important part of it. That the recipient must be guaranteed to follow this policy of deletion.
Yes.
So how do you ensure that the sender can be certain that the recipient will follow the policy? Because if you use email transport, it could in theory be sent to an email client that doesn't support it. Do you do something like marking it in the certificate that the owner of a certificate is promising to implement this policy? Or how do you envision that to get this guarantee?
Yeah.
It will be deleted.
There is a... So the question is, how do you guarantee and solve the Byzantine generals problem, which is a very kind of deep, you know, underlying network issue. How do you guarantee that another end user app that receives this and decrypts the message actually deletes it when I want to and actually, you know, performs the thing? First, the key and your own kind of transport that you're connected with, like let's say your own email servers, your own XMPP, whatever, peer-to-peer, it protects you and your server because you are deleting on your device the decryption keys. And if somebody has kind of hacked your server, you're safe yourself. But what other people do with their end device is kind of, you cannot control that. There's a very nice saying from Heinz von Förster from, I think he opened the first conference in 1959 on self-organized systems, where he said, it's always the receiver of a message who determines the meaning. You know? So you can send whatever you want, key flags, whatever. If the other device is hacked and just say, I take screenshots, I'm an AI, I just record everything, you know, then what? Then your app cannot even do anything. You're running on some AI and, you know, you're done. So the guarantee basically of what your receivers actually do with it is always limited. Like conceptually, fundamentally, you cannot control it. So only, you know, do trusted chats with people who don't do this. Where was it? It was here, right? You're talking about this structure, basically, and then say the question exactly.
For what fallback key is exactly used?
There's only one. There's an unchanging fallback key. For what key is this actually, like, how is this used? There's only one fallback key that never changes, is long-term permanent. That can always be used, like, even in a year from now, even in 2 years from now, you know? And this is the only one that actually rotates and kind of injects new keys. And on the receiving side, you just keep a stash of expiring keys and you choose the soonest expiring one, while the fallback never, it always stays there. It's only this part of the certificate that changes, ever.
But what
if you leak? If you leak this whole certificate, like your secret key and so on, our recommendation also for real-world users is create a new profile, like do a new identity. It's done. Like if you leak your private key, yes, there is something like post-compromise security, but in real-world situations, you don't recommend that. If somebody is like in a dangerous situation and they got their identity taken, they will reestablish. This is the recommendation. Like it doesn't matter what some cryptographic. Maybe you could recover or so.
All right. Okay, good. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you.